Hey, this is Nick from BJJ Pandas.
This is Vic.
And we are back. So, hey, if you're listening for the first time, just thank you for coming and joining us. Appreciate that. If you've been a listener since the beginning, gonna make a slight apology. We took a break. So, last episode you heard was back in April. Now we are in September, almost October, and we haven't been able to really produce a whole lot of content for you. So, a lot of things going on. This episode number... whatever the number is. It was uploaded today. I think it's like 32.
Something like that.
Actually walks through why we haven't been around and talks about the journey that we've had as we go through. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome. Hopefully you enjoyed it. It's an amazing podcast. Lots of cool stuff. If you've been listening forever, guys, we love you. Thank you so much for listening. I've heard you. I've been getting messages and people telling me, where's the podcast? I miss Monday mornings. We're back. We are absolutely back and back for at least the duration. So we do have, you'll notice a little bit of an audio degradation. If you listen to some of the original content, it sounds like complete shit. And then if you listen to like episode 4 through something, it sounds much better. And then if you listen to, at some point, the episodes, they sound really, really good. And now we're kind of back to the much better stage because my board broke.
We'll get it back.
If I had that board, I'd make like a wah, wah, wah. So yeah. I don't have that board. So hopefully we're going to get that back here pretty soon, and the audio quality will go back to where it was. But the content has always been amazing.
Yeah. So welcome back, guys.
Welcome back. Hey, real quick, just want to plug a couple of things we have going on. So do want to just give a shout out to Triple Crown MMA. So that's the gym that both Vic and I train out of under Jordan Sullivan. So really excited to be there. But do want to do a couple of shameless promotional plugs.
Yeah, I have to. Got to.
All right. Well, as long as you guys are okay with it. Not going to be like a JRE episode where I plug everything in the entire world. Well, not everything.
Yeah.
So BJJ Pandas. Guys, you all had inspired me to start a line of gis and no-gi wear. My wife also started Shadow Realm BJJ with Elisa Hampton, so super excited. We have a full line of gear. So we have gis, we have rash guards, we have shorts.
The whole shebang.
Everything. You want it, we got it. Well, not everything.
Not most.
Just
most
about
things.
Everything. Just about anything. Okay. We do patches, we do shirts, we do hoodies, hats. Pretty much whatever you'd want if you're practicing BJJ.
We have slides.
We have slides. We don't really have slides.
Well, we can't... Working on.
I tried them. They weren't great. I don't want to sell them. We're good.
We're working it out.
We're also working on boxing gloves and shin guards for our striking fans. A lot of cool stuff. If you head over to bjjpandas.com, you're going to see a great website that actually has a bunch of links. One of those links is to all the previous podcasts. You'll be able to see those. There's also a link to our gear. So if you click on products, you can go to bjjpandasgear.com/store, which is a lot to remember. So just go to bjjpandas.com. And you'll be able to see a full line of all the different products that we offer. You can pick them up in person if you're in the tri-state, Kentucky, Cincinnati area. Or you can get them sent to you because we ship. So that's certainly a thing. Credit card, PayPal, whatever you want to use. And guys, we are so excited to be back. I'm excited. We have this BJJ Pandas line, Shadow Realm line of gear that is going out all over the country. We have schools that are supporting the line throughout the country by using us as their provider of their gear for their academies. And we have them all over here in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, all over the place. So we are everywhere, and we're really, really excited. The other thing I'd ask, and I think Vic asks more than I do, is if you want to share your story, let us know. Go on to bjjpandas.com, click the contact us, shoot me a message on Instagram, shoot me a message on Facebook, BJJ Pandas, Shadow Realm, BJJ, either one, and click, like it, follow us. Do all the things you do on social media, and we're going to grow this thing to be huge.
So we want your story.
We do. I want your story. Vic wants your story. Our audience wants your story.
We all want it.
Everybody wants to hear your journey. Guys, so with that, hopefully you enjoy the episodes. Let us know what you think, and we'll talk to you all soon.
So we actually went to Walmart and like bought clothes for me to train and get back. But so I go with this guy, and I am pretty much wiping the mat with him, and he's like, he comes back like, how long have you been training? And I was like, about 15 years. I'm a black belt. And he was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like he had no idea. It was like really almost like perturbed by the fact that I was just handling him so well. So.
Welcome back to BJJ Panda Journeys, Stories from the Mat. I'm Nick.
I'm Vic.
And it is now officially the new year. So we sit here on January 8th.
It is officially the new year, and we're excited to bring in the new year with the Penders. So with us today, we have Marissa and Jeremy Pender. Hi, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
So really excited for this one. This is probably one of the cooler ones. Very excited for a couple reasons. But one, to have Marissa and Jeremy on, they are a black belt family. Both have their black belts, so they're married, husband, wife. And one of the cool things that I just want to give a quick shout out, Marissa actually got her black belt first before Jeremy. So Marissa, how long before? How long did you have your black belt?
30 seconds.
So it was actually the same event. They both got promoted, but Marissa did get hers first. So that was pretty cool.
Like, so welcome. Older twin, you know?
What's that?
That's like being the older twin, you know?
Yeah, I was born first by 3 minutes.
Right.
So welcome, guys. Welcome. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, man.
So we're going to get started with some pretty basic stuff. We usually get started with age, height, weight, and belt rank. So if you guys want to bring us through that, that'd be awesome.
Good.
35, just turned in December. I am a black belt, as you said. I fight at between 135 and 145. Try to keep it in that range, but I've been known to take some heavier fights. And I did fight at one time at 125 as well. So I've been at a lot of different weight classes. That's a female trait, unfortunately. We train out of Vision MMA. And did I get them all? My height. I am 5'6".
Awesome.
Well, I am 35, a black belt, 5'10", 135 pounds. What else do we need? I think that's it.
That's it.
He's got the same other credentials as I do. We're the same age. He's only like a month older.
So you guys could just put the same bio, right? And just change the first name.
Yeah.
It'd be all set.
Mine's
So you guys are both part of the team Sean Hammond's affiliate, which is pretty cool, up at Vision in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Talk about it real quick. I'd love to know, and I don't know if your journeys are the same or different, so feel free to weigh in however, you know, in whichever order you'd like. But I'd love to know where it started. How did you guys get into jiu-jitsu?
I think we do have a little bit of different beginnings. I was introduced to just fighting in general by friends that I were hanging out with. We watched the UFC's early days. I was a big Chuck Liddell fan. He was my guy.
And nice man.
I was just watching it and I really liked the excitement of it. I've been in the sports pretty much my whole life and I liked competing and those intense aspects of, I guess, going up one-on-one against somebody. So at NKU, when I went to college my first year, they had what was advertised as a combative arts club. It was run by a guy named Sean Boland. And when I went, it just basically ended up being a jujitsu club. Like some guys would show up in their fatigues and they would do jujitsu in their fatigues, but it wasn't geared towards combatives necessarily. It was just a jujitsu club. So that's how I started. And then from there, I got introduced to just different gyms in the area. I would pop in at different places. So I had visited George Grigel's. I had visited Gracie Cincinnati. I'd kind of gone a bunch of different places and just kind of popped in on like open mat type stuff. And then I ended up staying at Vision after I got asked to help. Dara Allen was their female fighter at the time, and she was really good on the feet. She had good hands, but she was kind of struggling on the ground game. So they had asked me to come in and help her with a fight camp. And at that point, I was just pretty much helping her with her fight, and that became my home.
So were you still in college at that point, or you're done with college then?
No, I was in college. I was probably like the end of my freshman year, maybe.
Oh,
freshman,
wow.
Sophomore.
So you'd still be, you know, technically consider a white belt at that point, or were you?
Yeah, I was definitely still a white belt. Helping out Dara was a little bit later. I would say I was probably getting into the end of sophomore year at that point. Even I didn't finish college, so I was pretty much done going anyway. Yeah, you know, it happens. For sure. So, but yeah, Vision was just, it was cool atmosphere. I got plenty of good work in. But at that point in time, they were just a bunch of people that beat each other up all the time. So that was my beginnings on the mat. I just got my butt kicked for the first like 3 years.
And who was the head coach at that point?
Aaron Thomas was our jiu-jitsu coach. Rod Housley kind of ran and managed the fight team, I guess you would say. And then I learned wrestling from like Daniel Strauss and Steve Muldrow, like people like old school days. So
nice. Yeah, that's good. Good training for sure.
Badass.
You ready to give them your story, dear?
So like when I started martial arts or?
Yeah. 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 Back to beginning. 5, 6 years old.
I was into, I don't know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be like a ninja, a black belt or a ninja turtle or a pro wrestler. Like I was really into pro wrestling for a really long time. And it was, I think my senior year of high school is when the Ultimate Fighter television show came out. And, it dawned on me that that was a career path that some people took. Like, I didn't know that you could get paid for like trying to be a ninja. So, I was super intrigued with that. I went to college for a year, figured out that I didn't like it. Got a job and decided that I was going to give MMA a try. I actually took my first MMA fight before I had ever officially trained. Like I took an MMA fight. I was going to get lessons for MMA at, I'm trying to remember. It was Militage Fighting Systems of Kentucky at the time. It was in Taylor Mill, Kentucky. And I knew my mom was going to get me a month's training at this school. And I was like, oh, okay. So after a month's training, I'm sure I'll be ready to fight. So I put my name or my email on.
Wait, so hang on. So if you had a fighter coming to the gym, new person, right? And they walked in and said, I want to fight in a month.
That's badass.
They got laughed off the mat.
Yeah. Deserving.
Yeah.
I do not recommend this path to
squatting today.
But yeah, I decided that I would probably be ready to fight in a month. So I put my email down and my phone number down to do the promotion was called MMA Big Show. And they had a fight card that they were putting on like the week after I put my name in. But it was like, hey, do you want to get on the next card? Like they had another card scheduled in like February of the next year. I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll be ready to fight by then. And I put my stuff in and the next day the matchmaker calls and was like, well, we actually have a guy who wanted to fight, but we don't have an opponent. Would you want to fight him? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I did a fight before I ever officially had my first class.
Which I
had. And out of curiosity, what was the outcome of that match?
I lost by arm lock in the second round.
He lasted a whole round.
I was gonna say, so you made it there first round. That's impressive. That's impressive. Yeah, you know, James Fisher told us. Well, James Fisher was on the podcast and he told us about his kind of same thing. Like he had no formal training. He was training out of a trailer with like shag carpet. And he went to a bookstore or something. There's a guy outside like handing out flyers and hey, does anybody fight? And he's like, yeah, I fight. But he's like, go to bars and just like get into like, you know, these random amateurs.
That's kind of how it was. One of the fights, one of the ladies that I fought early on, Adrienne Sieber was her name. And she was a cop in, where was it? Indiana? Yeah, cop in Indiana. She had an opponent drop for one of her fights and they were just like going into the crowd and saying, who wants to fight this cop? And you could like be almost drunk and go in and fight her. Like that, there weren't any commissions, there weren't any rules. It was just like, go do whatever.
Fantastic. I'm not even gonna lie.
And that's how somebody who's trained for like less than a month, he picks up a fight out of the gate. When was this? This is back like what, 10 years ago or so?
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, over
maybe 16, maybe 16 years ago.
Oh wow, yeah. Yeah, so different
I was three.
It was the promotion MMA Big Show. It was their first event ever. I think it was the first MMA event in Northern Kentucky.
That was run by Jason Appleton. Yeah. He dissolved it since then, but
yeah, Vic was three. Yeah, he was still wearing diapers at that point.
Vic, you're not still wearing diapers?
I mean, I am
sometimes when he rolls.
He's a little bigger now. Yeah.
Not like he needs them. It's just like in case.
Yeah, just right. In case.
At least when you go to open mat.
Yeah, Nick's a big guy. When he puts that press on, man, it's just you don't know what's gonna happen.
I feel that. I know.
Awesome. So then, how did you end up at Vision, Jeremy?
After that, I started training. Like after I lost my first fight, I was like, well, I probably should probably train. And I started training like it was my job. I decided that I wanted to be an MMA fighter. At the time, there was a popular organization called International Fight League. It was the IFL. And it was the first like team-based organization. And they had this set up to where they would pay the fighters a salary through the year instead of just paying the purses, and they'd like work with like insurance companies and shit to like actually make it more like a sports league. And I wanted to be a fighter in that. So the place that I was training, Militage Fighting Systems of Kentucky, was actually affiliated with one of the teams, like the best team in the league, actually.
Lions Den.
It was the Militage Fight, the Quad City Silverbacks.
Oh, that's what was the gold jersey you had?
That was
this was like I remember him wearing a jersey like when we first met, and it was like that was what he was seriously about it.
So what's funny is the jersey that she's referring to, and I don't know if she knows this, but her boyfriend that she was talking about, Sean, he gave me that jersey. That's funny. But that's great. Yeah, so I started training two sessions a day where we would do like two classes in the morning and two classes in the evening. And I trained like that for probably 6 months. And then I took another fight and it went way, way better. I did really well.
Training, yeah, you actually get better.
I know, amazing. Right. I started training a lot and improving quickly and competing quite a bit. And yeah, I did pretty good. Eventually the gym grew and we moved and switched affiliations, and then that gym shut down, and then that brought me to Vision.
Okay. And so is that where you and
no, but well, before we even started dating, I watched Jeremy's first pro fight at was your first US, right? US Bank Arena versus Carson Ganey. I went and I was like watching him and like cheering for him, knowing like we were kind of like we knew who he was. But we hadn't really started like hanging out or really been involved in anything yet. So
that brings me to my next question. How did you guys meet?
Training.
How'd we meet, babe?
We trained together.
Did you think you were like going to beat me up?
Yes.
And what happened?
She passed my guard the first time we trained. I did not anticipate it. I thought I was going to smoke her, and she ended up being like actually legitimately okay at jujitsu.
Was that the moment, Jeremy? Like, oh, like,
girl, I'm going to kill her. And then we're all like, got a black belt first.
So I was going to say, was that like the moment that you knew?
Yeah,
you knew
that she was the one? She was a blue belt at the time. She was a blue belt at the time, and I was still a white belt.
So you knew right then when she passed your guard, you're like, oh, this is the one. Like, I mean, that sucks. So this is
love forever.
Yeah, I knew that I was interested immediately, but I was like, man, I guess jujitsu is like for real. I'm not learning what I should be learning.
And then he was like, oh, now I'm going to try. And he was still getting worked a little bit. So
that's awesome. So you guys met at Vision, I assume?
Yeah, it was like a affiliate or like a satellite gym, I guess you would call it, of that. They opened a spot in Amelia. Yeah. So it was still under the Vision banner, but it was just at a different location. And I remember just kind of, he was just a cool guy. Like I met him, he had a Ninja Turtles hat on. He had said he wanted to be a Ninja Turtle before. I was like, cool hat, man. Like, and for the longest time, I didn't know that he was interested in me. Like most of the, when you're a girl in the gym, if guys are asking you to go places or, hey, we're watching fights, do you want to come? That kind of stuff. You don't immediately think like this person wants to date me. You just think like it's another guy at the gym that wants to hang out or do something or they're inviting you along. So for a while I was like, no, I'm busy. I got whatever. I'm working. You know, and then when I finally did show up at something that he had invited me to, he had bought my ticket, bought me a drink, met me at the door. I was like, oh, okay, that's what's going on.
This feels a little different than the random guy at the gym, right? Like asking me out for a burger and watch a fight.
He made it very clear his intentions at that point.
So, and you guys, so I kind of talked about a little bit, you guys were into MMA or fighting before jiu-jitsu, right? But you both actually are professional fighters at this point, right? You both have professional accreditations in MMA and
kickboxing. Yeah, last month.
Yeah, we were there actually. It was a dope fight. That was a really cool fight.
I thought I armbarred her. Not gonna lie.
Yeah,
me too.
Brazilian tap, I think that's called.
Yeah,
that's Brazilian tap. Commonly how it's referred, but ultimately it falls on me. I should have finished more proficiently.
We've actually mentioned you guys in our podcast before. So this is the Penders we've talked about, who are like the badass family, right? Two professional fighters, but some of the nicest people you ever meet in your life. And I'll tell you, so Tara. So we sponsor Marissa actually with Shadow Realm BJJ.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And
best I've had so far.
Awesome. We got done and Tara looks at me and goes, man, it is just wild to think of Marissa with all those kids running around. And then she's like a badass fighter. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely a thing. And I hearken back. I actually tell the story when I first met Marissa. So I knew Jeremy. I'd seen Jeremy at a couple different seminars and different things. And I didn't really know you yet. And Sean Snyder and I were working. We were at a Sean Hammond seminar and we're working. We're off in the corner and you're sitting on a metal bench at Triple Crown. And you're just sitting there.
Probably breastfeeding or something.
You definitely had a kid on your lap. Remember. And we're doing something. And we were screwing it up because we just suck at jiu-jitsu. But you looked over at us and you're like, no, all you have to do is this and this. And it just clicked. And we both got it right. And we're like, we don't know who this oracle of a woman sitting on a bench is, but damn, she's good at jiu-jitsu.
I'm good at teaching the kids class, so that's where that came from.
Yeah, that's exactly what we needed too. But I was like, oh, that's Marissa Pender. That makes so much more sense now. But yeah, that was when I first met. It was pretty cool.
Dude, I don't even remember when I met either of them. I just know I know them.
they just appeared in your life.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, that's fantastic.
Well, you were still pretty young. You were probably just worried about yourself at that point.
He still kind of is. Yeah. He's still 19, for God's sake.
It's a characteristic of your age.
Yeah, for sure. So now you guys have kids, and do they train much?
They all three are training now. Annabelle is about to be 3 this month. AJ's 4, and Max is just turned 9 in December. All of our birthdays are this year. Yeah, he just got his gray and black belt. So
Max was actually at that Fuji that Tara had her first competition, and Max was there too, and he competed. That was pretty fun to watch. I love watching the kids. I think it's just, you know, it's funny. We had somebody on the podcast not too long ago, and they talked about their first day going into the gym. And this guy's like a big beefcake of a dude, right? He's big and strong and you know, athletic. And
me.
It was not Vic. and he said that he sat outside of the gym. But this is, you know, first day of training when he's doing like trial classes, and he didn't go in. He punked out because he was scared. And to think of these kids at like 9, 3, 4, 5 years old going out there and competing and really not thinking anything of it. And you're like, man, they can do it. Why am I so scared?
Kids are more fun to watch like, than adults, man.
That's the one thing about kids, is they don't get in their own way for the most part. It's easier to teach them because they don't have any preconceived notion of what they're supposed to be doing, how it's supposed to feel, what it looked like on the YouTube video. Like they go in and they just try to do what you tell them to do.
Well, I think girls specifically, I find they follow direction a lot better than boys. Boys are just like, I'm going to be super spastic right now. I don't care what you told me to do. And girls are like, where does my hand belong? Very, very different.
You're not wrong. Styles. That's fact.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure,
Jeremy would agree. Although girls are harder to coach emotionally.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Crying.
Way more crying tears. Girls. Way more I remember one time being upset. I threw my gear off in the middle of the mat, chucked my gloves across the mat. I was bawling, crying. I'm like, just leave me alone.
Sounds like Bella.
We had one girl at the gym who started crying the night before in anticipation of a tournament.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But she cries a lot, to be fair. You know, 14, 15, 16 years old, like they just cry. That's just a thing, constantly crying. I have a 14-year-old at home.
Slow down, anybody. I think I know which one you're talking about.
That's the beauty about doing MMA, though, too, is like if when it comes to Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitions, like if you've been punched in the face or like beaten up really badly, it's not so bad if you just lose a grappling match.
Yeah, right. Jiu-jitsu is like, what? I'm gonna cakewalk today. Okay.
Nobody's gonna try and punch my face. All right, I'm in. Yeah, let's do this. Although now they got that combative jiu-jitsu thing that's starting to light up where you get slapped really hard. And I'll tell you, so Jeremy Martin, who he trained at Triple Crown for a long time, I think he's recently switched over to you guys.
Yeah, he's with us now.
Well, he lives up in Sharon or something. But so Jeff Johnson, our striking coach, had told us about this combat jiu-jitsu, and he's trying to get both of us to get into it. He's like, oh, you guys got to try it. It's going to be great. So Jeremy and I, just to see, like, if we could, we did a 30% sparring of combat jiu-jitsu. And it felt like when you had a big brother and they just started slapping you. Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? Why? Like, we just started laughing so hard. And then we couldn't breathe because we were laughing because we were slapping each other. It was a super weird thing. Like, I don't know if I can get into that combat.
Well, same way. Like, I want to get into it, but I don't know.
I don't know if I want some guy slapping me. Like,
I was actually supposed to do the EBI first women's one.
The Medusa.
Were you?
I was on that card, and our van got destroyed, and I ended up pulling from it because I couldn't fathom figuring it out if we didn't have a family vehicle, trying to get trips to Mexico to go do that and take care of everything. It just didn't feel like it was going to happen. So
that actually, it's not necessarily jiu-jitsu related, but certainly life journey related. That was a pretty wild story. I mean, I saw that you kind of post some stuff on Facebook. We talked afterwards. You want to kind of run through just real quick what happened that night?
What's crazy is it's not the first crazy thing that's happened with a car with us, but I was going out, I put our trash outside, and I set the bags down because I noticed the dome light was on in our van. And I went to turn it off, and the keys, I needed the keys because the doors were locked. I tried to get in every door and it was locked, so I had to walk away. I walked, the keys were hanging right inside our front door of our house. So I grabbed them. I walked back out onto the porch, and I just hear screeching, like someone is barreling down the street, tries to make a turn down our one-way street the wrong way, and just barrels blasts into our van that I was just standing next to. So I was super traumatized, thinking like I was almost in that or right next to it. Like I was like, oh, I almost died. Okay. So I run in and I'm telling Jeremy this, and then I'm like, oh my God, call 911. Cause there was a power pole right there that we parked next to. It's right outside of our house. So sparks had shattered. The lines came loose. There were hanging lines in front of our house. The cars are both facing a different direction. They're almost like in our lawn. The bags that I had put down, the garbage bags, were underneath of the car, of the guy's car that hit our van. And it was just crazy. I don't like, he said his brakes went out or something. It was a sketchy scenario, but I was just really happy to be alive. I felt like I'm a big faith person. I felt like it was a God moment. Like God was basically like, here's this dome light on, walk away. This ain't your time.
That's great. And the guy driving was driving like a Porsche or something, right?
Yeah, it was a Porsche. It didn't have insurance. It was a hot mess. We're driving like a hunk of junk now that someone so lovingly just gave us. But it was a weird scenario. I wasn't super pumped about it. But like I said, I'm here and talking to you, so I'll take my win.
Huge plus. That was absolutely wild. I know you started GoFundMe to try and get your family around. So if that's still open, I don't know if it is, but if any of our supporters wants to go out and check it out.
We ended up closing it. We have bigger fish to fry now. Actually, there is a GoFundMe that people can give to. One of our teammates' daughters, she's a teenager. She just found out that she has osteosarcoma. It's a really rare form of cancer in teens. And it's in her knee. Her name is Jada, and she's going to have to undergo some really intense chemotherapy, surgery, more rounds of chemotherapy there. I mean, it's a good scenario, good quote unquote, based on the fact that it hasn't spread anywhere else in her body yet. It's only in her knee. But that is, I think it's gofundme.com, whatever their website is, /F/fight-4 is the GoFundMe link, and that's posted on our vision page and other places. So, and we can link it for you.
Yeah, and we can put that in the show notes also.
Oh, for sure.
Much more pressing matters. we can deal.
Yeah, that whole life thing is pretty paramount.
That's, I mean, pretty important. Jiu-jitsu helps you prioritize what actually matters. You know, I feel like it's. Do I worry about the hand that's around my neck, or do I worry about the leg that's not doing anything? So
I usually end up worrying about the leg that's doing nothing and get choked. So I still have some work to do on that prioritization piece. For sure. So I'm curious for both of you, how did you become affiliated with Sean Hammonds and Team Sean Hammonds?
Well, for the longest time when we were at Vision, we were a Carlson Gracie affiliate, and our coach Aaron Thomas at the time, he had just up and left the gym with select people and left the rest of us. And we were kind of just like out there trying to fend for ourselves. And I reached out to one of my friends, who was still affiliated with Carlson Gracie, and that ended up not working out as well. So I talked to a couple people who I respected, Jordan from Triple Crown being one of them. And he suggested that I talk to Sean. Also David Riley, who's on the team. I talked to him about Sean, and he put me on in touch with Sean. I came down and trained at Triple Crown a couple times with him, went down to Nashville and trained. And then he invited me to be on the team. So we said, yeah, and started from there. I think it's been four years. We've been with Team Sean Hammonds 4 years.
And that's pretty cool. And I think that's how I hear a lot of the Team Sean Hammonds affiliate meetings. It's not so much of like, you know, Carlson Gracie, right? You go to the website, you apply to be affiliated, whatever. Like Sean is the team is a person.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's
really about person. He was interested in seeing us face to face before he made any decisions. That was for sure.
Yeah. He didn't just want your money. Like he wants to know you're part of the team. And mm-hmm. That's, I've respected the heck out of that. I think that's been really cool. And you know, for me being my first real school, being under Sean Hammonds, I don't necessarily know any other way, but I've talked to a lot of people and that's not the case everywhere, right?
Yeah, I only know Sean. I've never been a part of another gym, never even really went to another gym, just Sean.
So I interesting story. I went to New York over the holidays and I got to train at a gym out in near Syracuse, New York, Haven MMA or Haven Jiu-Jitsu. Really cool guys out there. Ben is the owner and the head coach there. And he had just recently broken away from an affiliate. And he announced, I think that one of the days that I was there, he announced that he had officially gotten his IBJJF accreditation so they could officially go, you know, fight under their own banner. And it was interesting that I hear so many people when they start gyms wanting to be part of these affiliations, but the further on down that journey people get, the less they care about the affiliate name and more they care about the actual affiliate. Like, what does the affiliation stand for? What does it do? As opposed to, I mean, can it get members?
You spend so much time with the people that you're training with and you're in a lot of vulnerable scenarios.
Yeah.
I'm not super pumped about being or even visiting a gym that doesn't respect the fact that when you're in these positions, you can potentially kill someone. If you're not letting go of a choke, if you're not, like, that's some serious stuff. So I don't take it lightly when I check out a new place. I'm always on my guard as far as when we're training and making sure that it's a safe scenario, that kind of stuff. But I mean, I think that matters more is like the type of people you're around.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And thinking about that, as far as being a black belt, specifically a female black belt, I hear a lot that when you go into any gym and you're the black belt, like you get singled out. Like people are, they're looking for you.
They're like, I'm doing it for you. And they just try to kill you.
Yeah.
Our own teammates do that, but in a nice way.
Yeah. We're expecting it from them. But what is that like being a female wearing that black belt? Was there a difference the first time you walked into a different gym with a black belt on as opposed to the brown belt?
I mean, most of the gyms we go to, we kind of know at least somebody there. So I don't really have to. I think probably the most fun one I just went to, we were in Tennessee and Lance, your friend, what's his last name?
Yeah, McConnell.
Lance McConnell has a gym in Tennessee right near where Jeremy's parents are at. And I went in and it was all no-gi and the guys were all training. And I wasn't even thinking about training really. Like I had stuff coming up and I wasn't trying to get injured or anything like that. So I was just kind of watching. I was going to let Jeremy do his thing. But then, you know, you get the bug. You're like, oh, everybody's rolling. I want to roll. So we actually went to Walmart and like bought clothes for me to train.
It should be like that.
So I go with this guy and I am pretty much wiping the mat with him. And he's like, he comes back like, how long have you been training? And I was like, about 15 years. I'm a black belt. And he was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like, you had no idea. I was like really almost like perturbed by the fact that I was just handling him so well. So, and then, you know, the other guys that are higher belt, they're like watching from the corner. Like Lance is like, watch this, you know.
Goading him on, right?
Right.
That's awesome. I think I'm absolutely fascinated by specifically women. I think it takes a lot more courage for a woman to get into this sport and stay in this sport and deal with some of the just nonsense. I know for Tara, like my wife has a really tough time finding good training partners because you've got a bunch of dudes or you've got young women, right? So we have like 14, 15 year old girls, but my wife's, she's a full grown woman. She's, you know, 200 pounds, 6'5", 8'5", 9". And to roll with a 120 pound 15 year old girl is, you know, that's not anything similar to what she's going to experience, right?
Too much of a age and body difference there. And then I can already imagine what the guys are like with her because they just look at her like she's comparable in size, so yeah. They don't have to change what they're doing at all.
And she's strong too, right? Yeah. She's not right. Like a weak, she's strong. So yeah, you're to your point, like they don't go easy.
But women need to remember that too. I've seen it go both ways that a lot of women that train think they can just do whatever they want to a guy, but sometimes they're getting that response because the guy is feeling threatened by the fact that they are coming after them. So, you know, it's like a dance. You got to remember that if you know some techniques and you're strong, you're capable of doing harm too. So,
well, especially that.
Well, Tara threw me once. That shit hurt.
Yeah, that's how she won her tournament matches. Yeah. She just yeeted this girl across the mat. Like she just flipped her twice.
I was so pumped for her. I know how nervous she was. So I'm really glad that went well for her.
Oh, that was a good tournament.
It did. I was super proud of her. That was a really cool moment. Just to watch her.
I was there so trying to help coach, but it gets tough when you have that. The kids are always toted along with us. Yeah. If you want us both there, the kids got to be there too. It's too hard to get babysitters every time. Most of the people that we would want to babysit are competing or on the team. Right, or,
yeah.
So it's just tough sometimes. Like we'll spend a whole day at the gym. My kids are dead. They're falling asleep in a wagon. Like, you know, it's
parent life, right? And I'm curious, how does that fall in? So you both kind of run the gym at Vision, right? You're both coaches, head coaches, both black belts. What is that? How do you balance that work and kids, you know, cause it's work, right? And then training on top of that too. So training as far as what you guys need, cause I mean, Marissa, you just had a fight, you've got seminars coming up. Like Jeremy, you came off a fight a few months ago. How do you guys keep that schedule to be able to train, coach and be parents and be adults? And I mean, all the pieces and parts.
We don't ever do anything at the same time. Neither of us can be competing at the same time. Like if he has something and I have something, it's got to be offset from each other. There's no one's doing kid duty or class duty and the other one's training. That's just kind of how it's got to go.
See, that's gotta be a tough schedule to manage. Cause it's weeks in a fight camp, right? Like it's not I have a fight tomorrow. So you need to watch the kids.
You're talking 10 to 12 weeks. Yeah. I really lean on Marissa and my fight camps the last maybe 6 weeks to help me teach classes, like a more number of classes. It's hard. When you're like, how do you balance it? It's like, you just don't.
You just do it. Weight cutting with a significant other and a family is probably the worst thing to go through at all.
So I'm in this really interesting class of weight that doesn't matter. Right. So you can just be fat. But I did. There was a Naga. And for the Naga, they had apparently they had COVID brackets. So you got an extra like 20 pounds. So it was like 220 to 240 or 200 to 240. I forget.
I thought it was like 225 to 250.
No, it's definitely 240 was the cut. I had to make 240. And I walk at like 260, 265. So we spent Vic and I went down to Guardian down in Tennessee and we trained like nonstop, legit, like nice. Twice a day, every day.
We lost a lot of weight.
What was your time frame for 20 pounds? Because I fought low. I lost 20 pounds in a month one time.
Yeah, I think it was like 3 weeks, somewhere there, 3 to 4 weeks. It wasn't, but I have a lot more weight to lose too, so it's a lot easier, right?
Women like to hold on to their weight in general. So.
Well, so yeah, it was pretty easy. And I'd never done a weight cut before. Like I'd never, so I didn't even know what to expect. I didn't know where I needed to be throughout that.
probably so worked out better for you, honestly, because when you get the anticipation of a weight cut and you know how bad it's going to suck, sometimes it's worse. And the stress of your body like keeps it on you. So the fact that you didn't know was probably helping you, honestly.
You're probably not wrong. And it was like 3 days before, and I was like, oh, I think I might actually make this. And then like the day of the weigh-ins, I was just like, I can't eat anything. I can't drink anything. Like, I was super strict, and I ended up making the weight. And I came in, you know what it was? 250, because I made 246 was the weight that I made. So it was up to 250. That was the first and only time I'd ever done a weight cut. And but when I was going through that, man, I was so angry. And like anything my kids did just instantly set me off. And anything Tara did like set me off. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty.
You get a pack to just not talk about anything that isn't necessity the day of the actual weigh.
Yeah, my parents hated when I wrestled.
Oh, it's awful.
Like each week I was cutting 10 pounds. So I wrestled at 150, but I weighed 160.
So every week before a tournament, you're cutting 10
pounds. Yeah, I cut 10 pounds.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
10 pounds worth of food. But as I was cutting weight, like no one could talk to me.
Yeah, it's that's rough. I couldn't imagine if both of you had to cut weight at the same time. That would just be catastrophic. Like that.
I'm horrible at it. Jeremy, I'm sure, has some great stories you tell if I wasn't sitting here. Like crying, like, I can't do it anymore. Calling my mom, I quit. This is awful. I don't want to do this.
It really, that's definitely not one of the fun parts of this whole game for sure. But you guys both being professionals, like you've got to cut weight. And that's, you know, we talk about a lot of things. There's people that are on steroids. There's people that do all sorts of weird, funky stuff. But the one thing you absolutely can't do and still be respected is not make weight, right? Like, that's like the one big taboo as a professional fighter. So it's.
Well, I went all the way to Nebraska. We were just talking about this in the car. I had a fight planned. It was like 3 years ago. Before this last one that I did, and I had just had AJ like about a year before that, year and a half maybe, and I was still breastfeeding and taking a fight, so like that was happening. But so we go all the way to Nebraska, and I was supposed to fight Josette Cotton, and she didn't even show up to weigh-ins. She stood me up at weigh-ins. She was she called the promoter and asked if I would even take it if she was overweight. And I had already given up weight. We were doing it at 45. And I was like, I'm not going to give up more weight. Like I'm already coming in at my walking weight. And she just refused to even show up. I was like, I'm not going to say yes to you over the phone. Like you have to get on the scale. Yeah. So
she's got to go balance our parent life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. Can't ever do anything at the same time. So, Jeremy, I'm curious. So you have professional fight experience, and you actually hold at least one that I know of because I watched you defend the title. But yeah. Do you have one title?
I have two.
Two titles.
They're both in MMA.
Okay, awesome. Different weight classes or different states or different promotions?
Different organizations. So one is the B2 Fighting Series, which was formerly Hard Rock MMA, and then the other one is Coliseum Combat, which is part of the B2 Fighting Series, but is its own organization that's separate from that. So I held that belt at 135 as well.
And you're 35, so in the sport of actual fighting at a professional level, like that's considered old, right? How much longer do you think? Yeah, for sure. You got these 20-year-olds coming in and. You know, starting all this new stuff. How long do you think that it's sustainable for you to continue to fight professionally?
Honestly, like I could do it a while longer. I just don't see the point. Like I'm not getting paid what I feel like I would need to get paid in order to keep doing it at this age. So I'll probably just stop. It's like soon-ish. I don't want to keep fighting. Like you were saying, 20-year-old guys when I'm 37, like another killer who's going to be a champion that I have to fight. Like, cool.
Oh, and at this point it becomes them making their name off of your back, right? Like it's tough.
Yeah. Not only that, but like you also have guys, like there's some kid I was supposed to fight at 25 for the B2 Fighting Series, that like somebody's always going to be talking crap. Somebody's always going to be like, oh, I can beat that guy, or that guy doesn't want to fight me and he's scared. Like, yes, I'm petrified of whoever is talking that shit, you know? Like,
and I'm 55. Well, and one of the things that I find super fascinating, and I've said this on a couple different shows, is the, I guess humility is the right word, but just the nonchalantness that people that truly can fight and do fight react to that kind of stuff with. So, you know, like I see you, I see Marissa, I see Tyler Hampton, like very similar, just kind of, yeah, talk shit, go ahead. I mean, that's fine. Say whatever you want to. I think one of the quotes was, a lion never has to tell anyone else it's a lion. It doesn't give a shit what the gazelle thinks. It's going to eat it. That's just reality.
You know, like, and once you've signed a contract to fight, then it becomes like, you talk shit. Like, you know, we're going to fight. Like, I don't have to talk shit to get you to fight me anymore. Like, you were scheduled to fight. That's what the weigh-ins, like mean mugging at the weigh-ins and like talking shit at the weigh-ins confuses me, because like, you know, you're going to fight tomorrow, right?
Like, you don't have to say
the person. Like, yeah. In 24 hours, you're going to be able to punch this dude in the face as hard as you can.
Like, well, that's like when they lose and they get all pissed off and they're going to come at the person. I'm like, dude, they just beat you. Like, I don't know why you want to fight them. You just lost. Like that, you know, you just fought. I love weigh-ins, especially like UFC, where people bring flowers.
Yeah, and those are my favorite.
Bring presents. That's how weigh-in should be. I think that's awesome. Yeah. That's a lot.
There's some guys who are really good at the weigh-in.
So when it comes to jiu-jitsu and or kickboxing, what keeps you training? Like what, again, getting older and potentially, you know, at some point in the next few years, probably not professionally fighting, what keeps you training and wanting to go to the gym every day and being as involved as you are?
Honestly, like seeing what martial arts has done for me in my life. I feel like if I can offer that to someone else, I should do that. I've experienced a lot of stuff that I didn't think that I would be able to experience. I'm not coming from a really well-off background or anything, so I didn't think that I would ever like leave the country and go do something that I really liked. So I was able to leave the country a couple times and like go to nice places around the world and fight for people and get paid for it. So that was something that's crazy. I got to meet my wife through martial arts, and I developed a little bit of a following, and I have a lot of students now, and I have a family that are all in martial arts. So if just that can do that much for me, like, I think that maybe it can help more people. And I try to give people as much as I possibly can. So.
And that seems to be kind of the plight of the black belt, right? Is that it's now the opportunity to give back in a different way, which I think is really cool. Just in general philosophy, just that kind of not becoming the teacher as much as becoming the person that gives back to the sport and to the art.
That's why I like teaching the kids class. Like, that's how I felt. Like when Jordan asked me to take over the kids class, especially, I was like, man, I was there. Like, now I get to like pass on what Jordan taught me and see the kids just excel. Like Sadie, Calvin, Emma, some of the kids that have been with us for the longest. I mean, Sadie's what, 5?
Right. Yeah,
5. And she started at like 2.5.
3.5.
3.5.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, dude, she's going to be doing jiu-jitsu like all her life now.
That's what I think about, like the Pender kids, right? Like, you've got, how old are you, young? Annabelle's 3 or just turning 3?
Annabelle is about to turn 3, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's just wild that she knows no life other than jiu-jitsu and kickboxing.
Yeah, they all 3 kind of grew up in the gym. It's been pretty cool.
That's do all 3 of them still really enjoy it, or do they do it because that's just kind of what the Pender family does?
Depends on the day, man. It depends on the day. Some days, like, they're all about training, and some days it's like pulling teeth. But it's just like eating your vegetables and taking a bath. Like, you're gonna train jiu-jitsu.
You gotta do it. That's when Sadie, back, it was before COVID, Sadie, you know, there were days where she was all about it, and then days where she wanted nothing to do with it. And at that time, you know, she was 4. So I'm like, man, I'm not going to fight her.
I feel the same, man. Like, I wake up all the time and be like, I don't want to train.
For sure. This morning I woke up, I haven't been sleeping at all like the past couple of weeks. And this morning I woke up, it was the first time I slept in my bed for in literally weeks. We'd been traveling, and then Tara got sick, so I wasn't sleeping in the same bed. So I was sleeping on a couch, which it's a pretty cool couch, but it's still a couch. And yeah. I finally, like last night, I was just so uncomfortable. Like, I'm just going to go sleep in my bed. And I did. And I woke up at like 9:10. And I was like, oh, fuck. I got to go to the gym. I got to go to open mat. And I get there and I love it. But just that whole getting there was just a grind this morning. But, you know, all part of the game, I suppose. So, you know, something we ask just about everybody is one thing that you've taken from jiu-jitsu that you've let transverse to the rest of your life. There's one lesson that you've learned, or maybe a couple lessons that you've learned that you really have taken on the rest of your life.
First things first, I think that's an important idea is if, like you and Marissa were talking, think about the collar, the hand in your collar, or maybe a knee on your belly, like which one is most dangerous at the current time, like which one is going to cause you the most harm the soonest. Take care of that thing. So like when there's problems and you have things stacked up on you, you need to take care of the thing that should be first. So like don't, you need to learn how to prioritize.
That's a good one.
Like, what is most important and what needs attention right this moment, and what can wait? What can chill out for a little while?
I love, you're the first person to say it. I really like that philosophy.
Agreed.
I think, I'm curious, you know, you think about neon belly with that grip in the collar. So you know that if you worry about the knee first, the next thing that's coming is that collar.
Right. Exactly.
So how do you prep for that? Like, and how do you bring that in the rest of your life?
You mean like, how do I prep for that on the mat situation, or how do I prep for that in life?
I think in both, right? So you think about the situation, we'll use the car and the person who's battling that cancer right now, right? Two issues, two things that are out there, both have their relevance in people's lives, but someone's life is at stake versus someone's travel is just kind of obnoxious, right? There's not hard to prioritize that.
Exactly. Life counts.
But you know that once issue A is resolved and, you know, positive outcome, everybody hopes that, you still got to deal with the shit with the car.
So
how do you like mentally prepare for the next thing, knowing that the next thing's gonna suck?
Being able to operate and rest would probably be, the second thing, right?
Okay.
So once you've figured out the collar, the hand in the collar, now dealing with the knee on your stomach. So the knee on my stomach might like feel a little bit worse than the hand in my collar, but it's not causing me as much danger. And I can still do things with someone's knee on my belly. You know what I'm saying? So like I can operate
under pressure
and under duress with weight on you.
Recognizing danger versus discomfort.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a perfect way to say that.
And I think we way too often, both in life and in jiu-jitsu, worry about the discomfort before we worry about the danger. Sometimes because we can't see it. And that's usually how I get caught. I get caught a lot because I don't see things, right? I don't recognize that.
That's how we catch you. That's what black belts do. We make you uncomfortable so you don't recognize the danger.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. James Fisher, a couple weeks ago, he was up and he was training and he would do stuff. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. I should probably get rid of, just got rid of that. And I just put myself in a really, really bad position because I didn't see the danger, but I felt the uncomfortability. And I think that's true in life too. Right. And I think when you think again, back to those two stories, those two situations that are existing today, you know, the poor girl who has cancer and battling cancer, and I'm sure she's going to win, but she's got to fight that fight. And that doesn't necessarily cause you immediate discomfort, right? We can certainly feel empathy and feel sympathy towards her situation, but you guys having challenges driving around to getting from work to home, that's uncomfortable, but it's not life-threatening. There's no imminent threat there. There's a lot of discomfort. And I think just proves
priorities, people, right? Like we've always been taken care of essentially. So just because the situation's a little uncomfortable for us, we're pretty good about just soldiering on. Like we know the next thing's coming, so.
And eventually get your guard back, because all black belts do.
Right? We'll eventually get our guard back.
That's it.
Right? My guard's really good, so when I get it back, it's going to be great.
That's Vic. Vic's been working the hell out of his guard lately.
Dude, I've been figuring out rubber guard. That's cool.
But I will tell you, Sean taught us.
You hadn't have said that. I'm not a big rubber guard fan.
Cool, man. I have a really hard time with high level.
Vic, you're young though. You're gonna be like 80 and not be able to train anymore because you blew out your knees playing rubber guard.
No, I'll take up yoga.
So what's really funny about that is like 2 days ago, he was bitching about his knees. He's like, oh man, he stood up. He's like, oh man, my knees. I'm like, dude, you're 19. Dude, you don't get to say that.
Listen, it was cold outside.
There was a storm coming and I could feel it in my knees.
You just proved my point for me.
My whole amateur career, I was a rubber guard player. Like, after my first fight, the one that I lost, that I didn't train for, I played almost primarily rubber guard from bottom.
Jeez, dude, rubber guard. Nick, you need to get in the rubber guard.
I'm not getting a rubber guard. I'm too old. My knees are already
busted. Don't do it. I don't know. Okay.
What killed rubber guard for me is when I figured out, like, if people just have posture, you can't do it.
Yeah. So
that's exactly what I'm doing to Vic, is I posture up and I pin his hips. And what Sean had taught us at a seminar was to grab the rope of the pants instead of the pants themselves. Yeah. Holy hell, that is like game changer.
Catch me in no-gi, though.
So. I won't play with you.
Honestly, that's always the difference between the upper level stuff and people that are kind of still trying to figure things out, is the knowing this little tiny change is going to change the whole scenario. You know, like the details are where it's at.
It's great. And it's things that like you watch and you don't see other people do sometimes. Like that whole belt, the grabbing the rope instead of grabbing the belt or grabbing the pants. I still see black belts and Team Sean Hammonds that don't do it. And I'm like, man, and I get that they've been training for like 10, 15 years and just got doing it the way they do it. But I'll tell you what, I can control Vic's hips. And that's the only shot I have of anything, because he's way stronger, way more athletic, way younger, way everything. I just need to control the hips. And then I can
rubber guard is a no gi only thing. I've attempted it once in gi against Kevin, and I don't know why, because Kevin's a brown belt.
Yeah, he sure is.
It's just, it was a really dumb idea.
And he's a good brown belt, too.
I know.
That's awesome.
Vic, if you like rubber guard, you should play around with like the lapel games in gi, because you can do a lot of posture control with like the lapel behind their back kind of thing. So,
Gubber guard.
Gubber guard. I love it. So Marissa, we just asked Jeremy what one or two life lessons that he's learned through jujitsu, like a philosophy or thought that he learned in jujitsu that he lets carry out through the rest of his life. Anything additional? I know you kind of heard the last part of that, but anything else that you can think of that you've learned in jujitsu that you've let influence your other parts of your life?
I think jujitsu is drastically affected. Some things for me specifically, surprisingly enough, I had like claustrophobia throughout my whole childhood and like didn't realize what it was. Like I was afraid of being in elevators, but if it was like a glass elevator, I was fine because I could see out. I freaked out in an MRI when I was a teenager. Like I didn't understand in my head why that was happening until later as an adult, I recognized it for what it was. But jujitsu is the only place where I feel peaceful in those scenarios. Like I can have you on top of me, breathing in your gi, like not able to get breath, but understanding that there is a way out. So it's like taught me to recognize those other scenarios where I feel that fear almost of like not being able to get out of a situation, that I'm going to find a way out. Like that it does exist. I just need to figure out where it is. Like or wait for it, be a little more patient for it kind of thing. So that's something that just directly correlated. Otherwise, it's just I think that whole notion of it's not about how good you are, it's about who's left. So like the just never giving up, the keep showing up, the keep trying. It doesn't matter how many losses I've experienced or failures that I've come through, is that I just keep showing up and keep trying and keep trying to be better. And that's applied a lot to things that I've gone through that I didn't have a choice in whether I failed or not. Like on the cancer note, my dad died from cancer over 5 years ago. And it was a really traumatizing situation for me and my mother. We were there with him. And coming through that, like realizing sometimes you don't get a choice as to the situation you're facing. You're getting collar choked and you're going to go to sleep. No. But it's definitely helped me to just pick back up and keep going and be okay with the next thing that's coming, you know, whether I know if it's good or not or whatever, I'm still ready to face it.
I think that's so, so important. When you think about things you just have no control over. And, I, and one of the light bulb moments for me was passing guard. When my guard sucks, it's horrible. When somebody goes to pass my guard, I would spend so much. Yeah, that's what I've been saying that for 3 years. So when that happens, it, you know, I would spend so much energy trying to not even retain my guard. Like I wasn't doing anything to retain, just fight them passing more than trying to retain.
Right.
And when I finally realized
anticipating where they were going.
Yeah, that's, and that's exactly, Tyler taught me a pretty cool thing from side control. You know, somebody's passing your guard, they go going into side control and grabbing the back of the armpit, right, and pushing it over and kind of stiff arming up and sitting up. So when I learned that when somebody's about to pass my guard, it's past the point of no return, right, and pretty much hips past hips. At that point, once their hips are past mine,
Turtle and Granby, man.
Not a lot I'm going to do. Well, but I have to react, right? I have to do something. And if that is to Turtle and Granby, or if that is putting the arm in the back of the bicep or tricep, or if it's just grabbing the bicep to make sure they can't get a cross face, or, but knowing the inevitable is my guard has been passed. I can't change that. I can't fix that. I can't do anything there, but I have control over that next thing that I do, and reacting in that way to anticipate where they're coming from, where they're going.
I refer to that a lot as white belt syndrome. As being like tunnel vision on the one thing that you're focused on and not realizing there's like a bunch of stuff happening. So like so many white belts you run into, I have control of this arm. So I'm going to armbar this arm, and they will lose sight of everything else that exists in the world until they get that arm. Like,
and meanwhile, there's been like three chokes, a couple ankle locks. They've given up all of it. The one arm.
30 different things, right?
That's awesome. And I know you guys have a couple things going on. So I know, Marissa, you've got a couple seminars coming up. You want to plug those?
I've got Triple Crown is actually hosting the Bluegrass Women's Jiu-Jitsu group. Gina Elliott runs that. And that's coming up soon. Vic, what day did we say that was? Is that the 6th?
Yes.
Okay.
The 6th.
February 6th.
Yes.
And then the February 20th, after that, I am hosting with Laura Hollick at Ronin Training Center. We're doing Girls in Geese. So we're the co-instructors for Girls in Geese event.
That's super exciting. Lots of cool stuff. And again, getting women more involved in the sport, which I think is absolutely necessary. I know both my girls, my oldest is, she's iffy right now. She's 14, so she's iffy about life.
Where Gabby's at.
She's iffy about jiu-jitsu. My youngest loves it. My wife loves it. I think getting more women involved in it is critically important as we evolve the sport. So
what do you guys think of the trends that are happening in women's jiu-jitsu, or the idea that your teenage girls kind of, I don't know, look at Instagram and think, oh, I got to be in my sports bra, or, you know what I mean? Like, there's some stuff happening that I'm not a super big fan of. I don't necessarily like shame it or talk down on it, because I, you know, women are feeling empowered in some sense by it, I would imagine. So I don't, but personally as a mom, I'm not wanting my daughter to grow up thinking that's the only way for her to get credit or views in jiu-jitsu, is to show off her body too. So that's been an interesting dynamic for me as far as how I approach women and how I portray myself on social media and things like that. So
I think you're spot on. So when we launched our line of geese, obviously in fight gear for the women, one of our folks said, hey, we need biker shorts, right? We need the tight women's no gi biker shorts. And when we started to design them, we were talking about the length. And I said, I don't care if people want to wear like super short shorts. That's cool, but you're not buying them from me.
Right.
So we made all of our rash guards for women. They're mid thigh, right? So that's appropriate.
Which is my choice anyway.
Yeah. And I think I know that whole Valley Tudo like super short shorts thing is a thing. I don't know, man. I can't.
I'm all about
it. Yeah. Jeremy loves it.
I like short shorts, man.
And Vic like rocks the tight shorts. Like, he wants mediums everywhere.
Listen, man,
and I can appreciate.
I got some good legs. All right, I got to show them off.
And you know, for you, brother, I'm all about it. I'll get you the tightest shorts you want. But for my daughter, not doing it. Like, I don't know. But the one thing I will say is that I think what we've seen is a switch from petite, super like skinny, big chested women to strength actually mattering.
Yeah.
Like, I think of Bella, right? Yeah. Bella has a physique of a woman that I can appreciate of the strength. It's not about beauty. It's about health.
Yeah.
Bella's a healthy girl. And I think that's what I strive to instill in my daughter is I don't want you to be concerned about the aesthetic of, you know, looking a certain way or being, be healthy.
Well, yeah, the aesthetic is always going to change based on what culture is doing or what the next popular thing is. Like, next thing you know, it's wearing super baggy stuff while you're training and it's getting in the way all the time.
Well, and I think that it has been, like, you think about anorexia and all the different eating disorders that have been out there for women. I don't see that in jiu-jitsu because you can't not eat and train. You can't nourish your body and train. So you're not going to be super, 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 super thin. Like, you can be thin, certainly, 125, 135, but you're not going to be like anorexic and be able to train jiu-jitsu. So I think there's some positive there, but I do really appreciate the fact that it's more about strength and conditioning and ability to move. And those types of things are being more elevated than the physical appearance.
Well, we brought,
I think, is important.
This topic up with girls, but guys face those types of things too. I'm sure I've heard about it, at least that I make sure when I'm coaching people on their weight cuts and things like that, or what weight class they're trying to be in, that I'm also cognizant of the fact that they might have those types of body image problems going on. Like, I'm not saying you need to be this weight because I think you look good at that weight. I'm thinking that you'll probably perform well at this weight. So then I, you know, you talk through it with them. But when people are like, oh, I didn't eat today because I was trying to get to whatever, I'm like, no, that's not how this works. So...
Yeah. And it's hard. Like, so I started at 350, 370, somewhere in there.
A lot.
I'm big, just great big. And I've never in my adult life been under the weight I'm at right now. Like, I'm 260 ish. I mean, it's the holidays, right?
Yeah.
But I've not lived a life as an adult under this weight. So I don't even know what my bottom is. Like, I don't know where the low end of that number should be. Right. So to me, and I'll tell you, like, IBJJF, you can't wear a rash guard. Fuck that. Like, I'm out. I'm not showing off my dad bod underneath the gi or not. Like, that's just not happening. Some guys are cool with that. I want nothing to do with it. Give me a rash guard. I'll wear the rash guard. But yeah, I think, I know in my weight class, I think you guys are experienced this. When you go out and do tournaments, you meet people and you become friends with people outside of your gym because you compete against them. And there's one guy who I'm hoping to have on the podcast here relatively quickly, Vince. And kind of same story, right? I remember he was my very first match as a white belt, very first tournament ever done. And it was the two of us. And he was 320, I think.
Was this a Bowling Green one?
Yeah. Yeah. And nice. I saw that, you know, you can see the thing on your phone, like what they weigh and everything. It doesn't tell you their height. So I saw 320. At the time, I think I was like 280, 285. And I'm like, oh, I got this. Like, I was 320. I know exactly what that is, right? And then I got up, and he was like 5'6 and 320. I was like, oh, that's a very different 320 than what I was.
Right.
And he was just a big fella. And he's lost a ton of weight since then, too. But I remember just being there, and it's just, it's uncomfortable. You're in super tight clothes. Neither of us were in any athletic shape whatsoever.
Yeah.
But we needed to start somewhere. I know you've actually got a member of your gym who's in the same boat, like,
yeah, you guys came in and hooked her up with a gi that'll actually fit her. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting that design now. And she, you know, she's definitely on the larger side. And the fact that she's willing to train,
well, we're just like,
into
not a cookie cutter body type. Like, yes, she's on the bigger end, but at the same time, A6 might have fit her if it had wider hips or, you know what I mean? Yeah. A little bit more in the front of the lapels. So it's like, it was like almost there to where she was going to be able to wear a traditional gi, but it just didn't have enough of what she needed. So,
and then it's super long.
Well, and she was so nervous to start to begin with. So that's like such a deterrent, right? Like, hey, I didn't know if I wanted to start this and now I can't find something that fits me. This isn't for me. You know, it starts to like permeate your mentality and stuff. You can always find the thing that's going to fit you. People will help you. There's so many people that love jiu-jitsu. They're going to find a way for you. So definitely don't let anything like that deter you.
Well, that was me, right? They don't make a gi for 6'3", 380. It's just not a gi size. You can get 7'5" and 380, but
and then you're not going to find 6'.
Yeah, you got to get your pants hemmed, and you don't have any choices. Like, there's three brands that make sizes that big. It's really hard. And I think I appreciate the people that go out and persevere past that and just say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm doing this. Like, this is what I want to do. And I just think that's awesome. That's the mentality that we need. And I think women or men, it's the same thing, right? And I think, again, it goes back to my whole family struggle with their weight. Myself, my wife, my daughter, we're not small people. We're Russian. We need to stay warm in the cold. That's a real thing. But I will say that we don't talk about the weight as much as we talk about the healthy lifestyle. Are you healthy? Can you run? Can you be physical? Can you do the things you want to do? And are you a healthy person? Right? And that's really where we concentrate way more than the weight itself, which I think is healthy.
Yeah, it's way, way, way more important to be active and be able to move your body through space and also maintain a reasonably healthy body image, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard too, especially as a teenager, guy or girl, like that whole body image thing as a teenager is just, that's a rough place to be, man, with all the Instagrams and the Facebooks and the
Twitter. Yeah, I would imagine that it's a little bit harder these days than it was when I was growing up.
Oh God, when we were kids, like, man, I remember when I was a kid, it was like, oh, that kid's fat. We don't know how fat they are. You don't know how many non-fat people are out there. Like, you see Baywatch and you're like, right. Oh, those are movie stars. You're not seeing Instagrams and Twitters and stuff. So it's certainly tough. Well, I'll tell you, there's one last question we do want to get to, and that is the person who either is thinking about starting training jiu-jitsu or the person who trained and then stopped for a long period and is thinking about getting back into it. What advice do you give them to get over that initial hump of intimidation? How do you start?
How do you get over the hump of intimidation and start training?
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of people think of MMA gyms, or you see Triple Crown MMA or Vision MMA, and you walk in, and your gym, I think, is probably a bit more fight-centric even than Triple Crown.
Sure.
You walk in, you see a bunch of type A-looking people. You see a lot of people hitting things really hard, and that could be your body or your face. Mm-hmm. You see people kicking things. You see, you know, arms being manipulated and legs being manipulated and being choked. So it can be intimidating for sure, especially if you're a middle-aged adult or a young kid. What do you recommend if somebody wants to do it, but they're intimidated by it? What would your advice to them be?
The one thing I say to a lot of women who are basically, they're like afraid to come in because they're self-conscious. They don't want people like looking at them, maybe feeling silly in the movements they're doing. They're just unsure about what it is and how to get started. So they just feel really uncomfortable and they feel like everyone's watching them in their uncomfortability. So the one thing that I tell people is the same thing that I experienced is that everyone's in here to train because they want to train. No one cares what you're doing or what you look like. They're focused on what they're doing. So like if you're doing your first line drill and you can't get it, no one's like looking over snickering like, ha ha, because they were that person. They did the same thing and they understand where you are and they know how it is. And most of the people, if they're not complete jerks, are down to help you. They want to see you succeed and they're there to build you up. So I just always tell them, like, you don't need to worry about people looking at you because they're not.
I feel like everybody sucks at jiu-jitsu just to varying degrees.
Yeah, we're just a little less sucky than everybody else.
I suck a little less than everybody else, but like just a little bit. Until somebody who actually knows jiu-jitsu walks in the room, and then I know a lot less.
I'm not even at the beginning of that conversation. I'm back.
Christian Woodmansey came into a seminar for us, and he just annihilated me and Jeremy in a nice way. Of course, he wasn't like coming after us or anything like that. But it was like feeling like a child again. Like he was just playing with me and doing whatever he wanted. And Jeremy's like, not me.
I was totally not.
Yeah, no, but you know what I mean? There's levels to it. So even when you're at the black belt level, you still have people you contend with that are better than you.
That's what I think is wild, is watching some of these competitions at black belt. When you get to black belt, the stripes don't matter. And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter if you've been a black belt for a week or you've been a black belt for 15 years.
That was
years,
my first match.
You're in the same bracket. Laura, yeah, and Russ is too.
Laura, who I'm teaching with for that Girls and Geese event, she was a black belt in a Nogi Invitational I did as a purple belt. So she had been a black belt a lot longer than I had. And she was my first competition super fight that I did as a black belt. And everyone's like, how's it going to go? what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm probably going to get my butt handed to me. Like, you guys don't know who she is, apparently, but she's no slouch. That's for sure. So it was that kind of scenario, you know, like it didn't matter that I had just gotten my black belt in March and that she had been a black belt for over 5 years. It was just, we were black belts and we were fighting each other.
And I think that's so wild because everything else, like the first year, the first 2 years, the first 3 years, like you have black belt, or you have white belts and blue belts. And then you get to black and it's like, yeah, no, cool. You've been training for a month or you've been a black belt for a month. I've been a black belt for 15 years. So yeah. I'll meet you on the mats. Right? You're like, wait a second. I feel severely outknowledged here. This is kind of wild. But it's reality, right? That's the game. So,
and I think spending that much time in it, you start to recognize your superiors. I mean, as you would like refer to them, like we know walking in, we knew that Sean was going to be able to teach us things and he's ahead of us. You know, that it's pretty simple once you have been in jiu-jitsu for so long to go into a place and recognize who's ahead of you. Like maybe beginners don't really necessarily see that and they don't have the wherewithal to even know to think about it because they're like walking on the mats trying to beat the purple belt. Because they don't have any understanding of how much work they put in to get there. So like we, as you come through it and you do all the work and you understand everything everyone's been through, it's much easier to recognize like, oh, this guy's going to work me.
One of my buddies who trains with us, he brought his friend in, or his son in to start training with us for a little while. And he wanted to do MMA and stuff. So we would roll and lightly spar MMA, and every time we went to the ground, like he's a lot bigger and like more athletic, like he's a strong athletic kid. He's about to go into the military and he couldn't figure out why I was beating him on the ground and like why I was like able to basically manhandle him. It looked as though I was like holding him down with my muscles, you know what I mean? And he's like, why can't I do this stuff? And after like a couple of times, he's like, I'm going to make it my mission to tap you out. And his dad just starts cracking up. And I'm just like, you can train for a decade and you will never see the day, bro. Like, you will never.
And I think there's that time, right, where you as a lower belt, I can speak to this, where you catch an upper belt in something. And it really is. It's one of two things, right? It's either they didn't respect the fact that you could pull off what you're trying to pull off, or they intentionally let you get to a point that they thought they could come back from, or they're going to fight back from, and they just let it go a little bit too far again, or they didn't respect it. And I was able to catch one of our brown belts in a loop choke because they just didn't respect the fact that I was going to be able to pull it off. They're like, I'm safe.
Yeah. Jeremy goes,
he almost did like gurgling, like, I mean, it was right there.
Jeremy doesn't respect my baseball bat choke, I'll tell you that.
I heard about that one.
Of course.
But I think that's, it's, but it's true. And I think when you're first starting, you know, if you do get lucky enough, I tapped one of our black belts with just straight pressure. The reality is that I was in such a dominant position that it wasn't even like he was like, it was scarf hold. I outweighed him by like 150 pounds. Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of place to go there. And while, just stand up. And while it felt good, the reality is like he let me get way too far. He shouldn't have ever let me get to that point. But he was, you know, we were working on it, and he was putting himself in that bad position so that he could work out of it.
It goes the other way though too. Like I'll call Jeremy Martin out because you had mentioned him before, and he's kind of been with you guys, but he's a pretty stubborn blue belt. Like he'll be deep in some stuff and he does not want to tap. And I had him in a triangle and I had a Kimura on top of the triangle and his arm is like bent backwards. And I'm just waiting for him to tap, you know, when you're holding it to that like point of no return and you're like, if I go farther, it's probably going to mess you up. So I'm not going to do that, but I'm still waiting for you to recognize this scenario that we're in. And he just refuses. So, you know, as the upper belt, you just let that go. And they think that they defended it or that, you know, like that it was like their moment that they got out of that thing you put them in. And I'm just like laughing about it. Like, oh, gosh. So
I've been there quite a bit with him.
Yeah.
Oh my.
And so not to, he's such a good guy and he tries so
I love Jeremy.
Ridiculously hard. He's very dedicated. So I'm not talking bad on him at all. And I even talked to him about it. I was like, bro, you're dead to rights.
Just well, he knows.
He knows I'm going to go to the next thing or something. I don't know. But
he's doing it out of spite. He wants to see if you break it. Will she actually
break my arm?
And I've been in that position where I've been on the receiving end of that to where I didn't want to do something, but I've learned, like, I've messed up both my elbows and my shoulders. And we were working armbar escapes last night, and I forget who I was even working with, but whoever it was, like, it was to the point where I know. And it's one of those things where if you're holding that armbar really tight and it lets go and you lose that grip, that shit is coming with them. Yep. And it's going to hurt. Like, there is no niceness.
There, Jeremy, right? And I both, when they've got locked over their shoulders grip, in that scenario. Just thinking you were rolling and your arm didn't come with you, or wasn't even like, some of them weren't even like bad places necessarily. It just was turned the wrong way, went a little too far.
Well, and I end up tapping so early. I'm like, you didn't have that, but you were close enough that I didn't want to even fuss with it. So you got it. Yeah, it's yours. Like, I have no shame to tap. I'll tap left and right.
I told a white belt about that. He had just come into the gym and he just didn't know, like, the limit that he had. And I was like, if you take yourself, you're brand new. I was like, I have been training for a while, so I know pretty much what your arm can take as far as the general population and anatomy is concerned, right? I know at what point where I'm feeling pressure thinking this is probably going to hurt you. Granted, there's some people that are more flexible, things like that. But at the same time, I was like, if you take yourself to the limit with someone like me, a little bit safer for the most part, because we're paying attention to you. But if you do that with someone your own skill level, that's a brand new white belt or day one, or even a hungry blue belt, they're not concerned about you. They're concerned about what they're doing. So they're not going to stop. And not if you take it to the limit and you're like waiting to see if they're going to stop, they're going to break your arm at that point. So it's just understanding the different people you're going with and how that changes the game is important too.
Well, I think there's a respect factor. Like, people are intimidated and respect the upper belt, right? And don't necessarily want to, because they're just going to get beat up by an upper belt. But to your point, like, I would much rather roll with an upper belt than I would with a brand new day one white belt.
Oh yeah.
I know if I roll, especially my size, if I roll with a day one white belt, somebody's getting hurt. And I know it, like, it's almost inevitable. And I feel bad afterwards because it's usually the other person. But I mean, that spazziness, sometimes you just can't slow it down and they end up hurting themselves. But when I roll an upper belt, it sucks because I get my ass kicked constantly, but I don't get hurt. My ego gets checked a lot, but I don't necessarily get
hurt. What's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you with a white belt rolling? I've got one. I took a guy's back, and to try to escape the back take, he did a full-on front flip and landed on top of me. But I was still on his back and I still finished the joke. So I was like, what was that accomplishing exactly? Like, I just stayed on and followed, but it was like, he just like crushed me. And then it was just hilarious. I was like, I would not even have thought that you were going to think to do that.
So I think my craziest moment with a white belt, it was that guy who was just a prick beating up on Nick. And Nick's like, What were you, a two-stripe white belt?
I was a two-stripe white belt. I was still like 300 pounds. And I go to the gym to have fun. I have aggression, but my aggression comes out just by wearing me down. So that's why I'm Panda. I have fun. I roll around and I'm goofy and I do stupid shit. And I'll talk about Transformers while we roll. Like, who's your favorite Transformer? I like the Decepticons. Like, I'm just that fun-loving guy. And this dude was like ready to just go ham. Dude, 100%.
He was just being a dick. And first, I was a blue belt then, and I was, for aside from Elisa, I was the highest belt there, but he rolled with Elisa and was just a dick, and I was like, all right. And then I asked him to roll and he was like, yeah, sure, like, and he's like a two or three stripe white belt and I'm a three stripe blue belt at the time, and he thought he was above me. But then I turned my head and I see everybody look at me, and then they gave me that look where it's like, oh dude, you gotta do something about this. I don't know. After that day, he just never came back. I threw him. I slammed him like twice. I got like a double standing arm bar. He went for underhooks and I caught him at his elbow and just hipped in.
That's a tough scenario to be in, because being a blue belt and being considered the leader of your gym at that point, or the person that had the most experience, that's a really tough spot to be in. Like, we call it like the gym enforcer, like the person that when someone gets out of hand and they don't want to calm down, that's when you bring in your guy. That's like, he just handles everybody. And not for us, we've got like Perry and Jeremy and, you know, the really big guys, you've got Perry. You know what I mean? Like, you have those guys that you know that will take it to them and slow them down and kind of show them what's up. But it's just, I can't imagine being a blue belt and trying to handle that scenario. That's so hard. Like, I never had to deal with that until I got to be a black belt. And it was like, now people look at me like, oh, you're going to take care of this scenario kind of thing. We had a guy come in for sparring. This was back in old Vision days. And like I said, that was just a bunch of guys fighting all the time. And they were pretty tough guys. So Roger Bowling, he just did that Kumite. You guys saw him.
He had
a guy come in, and he was one of our enforcer type guys. But this guy comes in and didn't understand that we don't throw knees full on in sparring. Like, you're not trying to knee somebody in the face and break your training partners. Like, yes, when you're in a pro fight, you're throwing knees, but you're not doing that in general sparring in the gym. So unless you've got knee pads and it's understood and people are, you know, like, it's a very dangerous situation if you're not doing it correctly. So this guy just comes in and starts like trying to knee people in the face while he's sparring. And first he's like, we don't do that here. Like, we're not, that's not part of our sparring. Like, you can show it, but don't throw it. And he threw another one like hard, trying to like knock him out with a knee. And so Roger just dropped him, threw a big hook and knocked him out. He was like, see you later. Like, he didn't respect the situation. He didn't want to listen. And it was kind of like, man, learn the hard way, I guess.
So, Jeremy, I think that pretty much it, man. Anything else you want to plug in that you got going on that you want to tell our audience about?
No. No, I just...
The exciting life of Jeremy Bender.
I teach my classes and try to make people better. That's it. Like,
well, if you guys want to check him out there at Vision in Cincinnati, actually, is it Norwood?
It's in Oakley. It's the fancy side.
Oakley. Fancy side of Norwood. But Cincinnati area, Vision MMA, go check him out. I will tell you that if you go and you ask really nicely, Jeremy might show you this really douchey move from Dorsal Kimura. It works really, really well. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to go.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You have to go see him. Remus teach it to you. But we'll leave that as a little nugget there for you. So if you're in the Cincinnati area, you go and see Jeremy at Vision, see Marissa at Vision. Certainly go out to Marissa, has the two seminars coming up, one at Vision or one at Triple Crown here in Florence, Kentucky. That is on February 6th, and then one up in Columbus. And that is the 22nd, I believe, of February. We'll put links in the show notes here, so you make sure you have all those, along with a link to help out that young lady who's battling cancer right now. Make sure she wins that fight. And anything else that you guys can do, appreciate that. With that, Jeremy, it's been awesome. Make sure to tell Marissa goodbye. Tell all the kids we said hi. Great interview, man. Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Take it easy.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.